great day starts with a great morning. Morning Talk with Rowena Baird on SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
Thank you for joining us. Good morning and welcome to Morning Talk on SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader. My name, like you heard, Rowena Baird. We start today's show with a discussion about food security. The issue of drought and possibly other factors has made food security one of the most important global issues. On the other hand, there are those who think that urban agriculture is the solution to the growing problem, the problem of urban food insecurity in South Africa and also in Africa more broadly. Now, this morning, we're in conversation with Dr. Jane Battersby-Leonard, Senior Researcher in Urban Food Security and Food Systems at UCT. And she's of the view that there's very little evidence to support this level of investment and focus. So today we ask, what do we need to do to address the problem of food insecurity? Dr. Jane Battersby-Leonard joining us in our Cape Town studios. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Good morning, Irina, and good morning to the listeners.
I'd like to see if I'm understanding you correctly, if I'm getting this right. You say that urban agriculture is not a panacea for Africa's food crisis.
Yes, absolutely. So we've been working on food insecurity in urban areas for about 10 years now, and have done a series of surveys and case studies that have really shown that the uptake of urban agriculture just isn't that high. The benefits are not that clear, and yet the levels of food insecurity are incredibly high. So the National Sanhane Survey in 2012 showed that in urban informal areas and in rural informal areas, about 70% of households were either hungry or were at risk of hunger. And we just don't think there's enough interventions to address the severity of this problem.
All right. And basically you're saying there is no evidence that the answer is urban agriculture. We'll talk more about this, and also I'd like to hear your views on 0891 104 207.
105.1, the home of SAFM in Johannesburg. SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
With over 1 million people living in Kangala District, booming trade, energy, mining and manufacturing sectors, and at least 14 bankable flagship projects, the Nkangala District is open for business. The Executive Mayor, Councillor T. Dingwenya, will host an investment summit targeting 150 local and international investors on April the 21st in Emalahleni at the Ridge Hotel from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. SAFM will broadcast from this event. Kindly RSVP to Dr. Jason Musyoka on 072-396-1938 or Mr. Mkosi Mavuso on 072-587-6697.
You're listening to Morning Talk with Rowena Baird. Great conversations sound a little something like this.
Talking about urban agriculture and whether it helps food insecurity in South Africa, Dr. Jane Battersby-Leonard is of the view that it does not, because there is no evidence that proves that. Now, Dr. Battersby-Leonard, urban agriculture is the primary, it's usually the only food security policy of local governments, isn't it? I think it also forms part of the focus of many NGOs and corporate social investment programs. So are you then saying that all this energy that's been put into that and all that investment and focus is misdirected?
Say all. I think part of the problem is that there are certainly very successful urban agriculture projects. I'm not denying that. They are fewer than the narrative suggests. So you find projects that are started by NGOs that have a lot of support and ongoing training and monitoring and evaluation can be quite successful. The unfortunate thing is there are a number of projects where it's simply give people spade, give people input, and hope that it works. And so the evidence that that works is very limited. And so that's really the ongoing concern. So is it wasted money? Potentially it is. When you're looking at a context where they're potentially other interventions that could be done that could be more cost effective. The continued investment in urban agriculture, unquestioningly, we think is a problem.
And we'll talk about those other potential solutions that you may have, but let's just stay a little bit with the successful projects, because like you also say that there have been successful urban farming hubs in South Africa as well, and they provide not only nutritious food and in many instances economic opportunities as well for the neighborhood, but they also make use of space very creatively, don't they? Give us examples of some of these successful projects.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work mainly in Cape Town, so the examples I speak to will be Cape Town based.
Yeah.
But Abalimi Bezekiah, working across the Cape Flats, have an incredibly successful program where they buy vegetables off the farmers to provide them with a market opportunity, because one of the challenges is how to get the vegetables to market in a manner that's going to be income deriving for the farmers. So Abalimi buy the vegetables and box them and sell them as an organic veg scheme. So there's investment in that. We also know of groups like Soil for Life, who do great work in rehabilitating neighborhoods through urban agriculture. So there are certainly those cases.
And could they be replicated in other places?
They can be replicated. So one of the things we're suggesting is that cities rather focus on partnering with the NGOs who are doing this kind of good work. So the city of Cape Town had an MOU with one of the NGOs to help them train gardeners. So sort of partnerships with NGOs is potentially the way forward, rather than rolling out a number of projects that are fairly poorly supported.
And I'd like you to contextualize this for us. I mean, why does Abalimi work in Cape Town? I mean, is it maybe talk about the factors that contribute to the success. Is it issues like soil? Is it climate? Is it the level of education of people in that area? And who would be more likely to engage in urban agriculture? Is it the wealthier people or not?
Yeah. So from our surveys, we've tended to find that the people who are involved in urban agriculture are not the poorest of the poor. So there seems to be this, you need to have some kind of income buffer in order to make the investment. It also tends to be older people, often in receipt of old age grants. So there's that element of, there's a sort of a pre-selection of who does this. I think the success of Abalimi has been that they've been in the business for over 20 years. Mm. And so they have long-standing relationships. They do training. They provide inputs. They have very clear marketing. So they have a long history in working with this, and they have networks that work. And I think, you know, it takes that kind of depth of network to make these things.
Well, it's got to start somewhere, Doctor. Yeah. Even those networks started 20 years ago. So we've got to start somewhere, and perhaps then we'll see the successes 20 years later.
I hope so. But I do think we also need to start looking at other options, because, again, urban agriculture is not the obvious solution for the majority of the poor. And, you know, the work that PAX has done in Pietermaritzburg, looking at the impact of food prices, they're seeing, you know, we've had an increase in social grants, but within the first 3 months of the year, the food prices have escalated to an extent that any gains in social grants have been lost. And our concern is that not everybody can farm, not everybody wants to farm. And we need to find mechanisms to enable those people to become food secure.
Taking calls, 0891 104 207. You can also send your SMS to 34701. You can comment via that. Bumelelo joining us in Cape Town. Good morning. Welcome.
Hello, Rowena.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine, thank you, Bumelelo.
Rowena, I just want to say this. Abalimi Bezekiah are successful primarily because of two things. One, you know, any person can grow anything unless you've got somebody who's going to buy that thing. You know, it's not going to work. Abalimi Bezekiah, they go to the market first and find the people who are going to buy the produce. You know, the second thing is that you can't force people to do something against their will. The people who participate in the scheme are the people who are really interested to make a meaningful change, both in their lives and in the lives of the people who consume the product. But the other question I have for Jane, I see in Canada they did a study, you know, to look at food waste, which is good quality food in urban areas, which is not you know, is being disposed in a landfill, you know, because, you know, there's no policy, you know, and there's no regulation in terms of how, you know, that food can be used to come in from these value chains, you know, to feed people in the urban areas. I just wonder if she's got a view on how we can manage food waste, because we've got lots of it here.
Thank you, Mpumelelo. Thank you for your contribution. Dr. Battersby Leonard, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So food waste is a considerable problem. And in South Africa, in Canada, most of the waste is from the retail end. In South Africa, we have waste from both the post-harvest losses and the retail end. And we know that a lot of it does end up in landfill, and a lot of it ends up in landfill partly because there's no clear municipal policy to enable the large retailers to separate out their food waste. There are certainly organizations like Food Bank who are doing redistribution of food that has been wasted that is still safe for human consumption. And that's doing something. We do need to ask why the supermarkets are generating so much waste in the first place, obviously. But we do need to think about what other options there might be. So there are suggestions around providing composting space, and that in itself would provide more inputs for urban agriculture, which might make it more viable. So there's a need to think about the food waste along the whole value chain and what interventions might come about through that, and where it is that the municipalities can provide an enabling environment to the supermarkets, to the retailers, to the farmers, to better use their waste.
His first question was about abalimi being so successful, and they were saying perhaps they're so successful because what they do is first make sure that they have a market before even planting anything. Mm. Is that important?
It is important, and to me it's an important consideration because they're selling into quite an elite market as these organic veg schemes, and there's a question about to what extent that market has potential to grow. It certainly has some potential to grow, but, you know, even me at home with a two professional income household, we're noticing the increase in food prices, and people are starting to make decisions around what they're buying, and ethical purchases may be in decline as food prices go up.
Yeah.
So I think we need to be cautious that this is an ever-expanding market potential. But certainly that is why abalimi has been successful.
Let's go back to the calls. Claire in George, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to you and your guest and the listeners. I think perhaps the focus should be on households becoming self-sufficient, which is actually reasonably easy to do, even if you haven't got much space. A friend of mine used to live in a houseboat on the Thames, and she used to have pots on the roof of the houseboat with all sorts of herbs and vegetables. And a friend of mine has cultivated potatoes by putting sprouting potatoes in a tyre, and then as it grows, putting on another tyre and another, covering them up so that you get stacks of potatoes. And it has been said that the size of a door would keep a family in food quite happily, provided you, of course, mix it around. Now, I think a lot of the focus is on whether you're going to be able to sell them. What happens where I live is that people swap around seedlings when things come up. I always keep all the peels and everything and then use them as compost. And when we have surpluses, we simply give them to each other so that we've always got some things.
All right. Thank you, Claire. Thank you for that. And Dr. Jane Battersby-Leonard will respond to you. And Sebastian, please don't go away. We'll come back and take your call. And we'll take your call as well, Peter Wiley, after this.
105.2, the home of SAFM in East London. East London. SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
The National Council of Provinces will be returning to the Eden District to report back on commitments made to citizens during the Taking Parliament to the People program that was held in Oudtshoorn in April 2015. Residents are invited to join the NCOP delegates for public report back meetings in Buto, George, Hesekwa, Kanaland, Knysna, Mossel Bay and Oudtshoorn on Tuesday the 19th of April at 2016 at 5. 5 p.m. For more information, visit www.parliament.gov.za or follow Parliament of RSA on Twitter or like their Facebook page. This message is brought to you by the Parliament of South Africa.
Our best conversations are the ones we have with you. Call us on 0891 104207. Tweet at SAFM Radio or SMS 34701. SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
We are talking about urban agriculture this morning and whether it could contribute towards food security in South Africa. Our guest is Dr. Jane Battersby Leonard, and taking calls now. Let's go back to the line. Sebastian in Cape Town, thank you for holding. Welcome.
Good morning to you and Dr. Battersby. The previous caller, Claire, raised what I wanted to also raise with Dr. Battersby, but I'll just restate it. I've received the impression that Dr. Battersby has been talking about commercial urban agriculture, and what Claire raised was subsistence or personal usage urban agriculture. I think there is a differentiation, and I wondered if Dr. Battersby could elaborate and get into the personal subsistence side of things as well, because I don't think that's what she was talking about. Maybe I'm mistaken. A second thing I'd like to raise with her briefly is if she has any opinion on what is proposed for the Philippi agricultural area in Cape Town, because what is proposed by the City Council is sending a large portion of this land off to property development, and people have been opposed to this, have stated that this will have a ruinous effect on the underground water aquifer, which sustains the rest of the agricultural area, and that it will be a disaster for the vegetable growing area of Cape Town if this is allowed to happen.
All right. Okay, thank you, Sebastian. Dr. Battersby Leonard, after this call with Peter Wiley, good morning.
Good morning, Rowena and your guests. Look, I by no means practice what I preach. I'm a very poor gardener, but I had Robert Mazibuku on my farm during the time when the township unrest was such that he couldn't, it wasn't safe for him to go into the township. And one of his favorite expressions was, dig a grave, bury hunger. And he was advocating trench gardening, and he claimed that he learnt a lot in Kenya. And he got very excited on my farm when he saw what he called black gold, and that was the manure. And we've all got to undergo a change and regard food production as a priority and develop skills, because as he said, you can live on an area as big as your front door. And it's so sad that people don't. I've just come back from the township now, and you know, I include all racial groups. They've got to change their attitude totally, because a friend of mine went over to Japan, and he said the guy in the flat walked down into the little valley below his place there, and he had a garden going. And one of the things, unfortunately, that inhibits people from growing things, Nick James wrote an article about Rwanda, and he said when they plant a seed, even if it's on the street, they can be sure they'll harvest that. But in this country, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that you plant gets stolen. But apart from that, we've really got to undergo a change, because, Mollison said, man creates organized disorder, whereas nature creates disorganized order. And we've got to start living closer to nature and appreciate the value of organic matter.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Peter Wiley, thanks for that. Dr. Jane Battersby Leonard, please respond to Claire, Sebastian, and Peter. Claire and Sebastian both talking about subsistence urban agriculture, and Sebastian wanting to know if that's what you're talking about, or if you're talking about the more commercial nature of urban agriculture. Please, can you respond to that?
Yeah, so I mean, my primary entrance into this is through food security, not through enterprise. And so in our work, we've asked people, where are you sourcing your food from? Are you eating anything you're growing? And in our 2008 survey, we found less than 5% of households in poor areas of Cape Town were growing any of their own. We did a follow-up survey in high-income, low-income, and middle-income areas of the city, and found in high-income areas about 10% of people were consuming anything they were growing, and it was less than 2.5% in the poorer income areas. So it does seem like it's an obvious solution. It does seem as if it's something that's easy to do. do. But clearly that's not following through. And I think Peter touched briefly on it with the problem of crop theft. Also, if you're living at such poverty margins, you can't risk not being able to harvest. So Leonie Joubert has actually said, which is a better guarantee of food security, standing on the side of a road with a sign saying no food, or trying to grow yours and risk losing everything?
So what is better?
You know what? I think there's some initiative to standing on the side of a road. But I'm going to get hate mail for that one. I think we need to be aware that there are a number of difficulties in growing food. It's not as simple as putting a seed in the ground and watching it
all
come
right.
up.
So if that's really not the answer, then what are the potential solutions? Because 60% of the global population is predicted to live in cities by the year 2030, and feeding those people is going to become even more challenging. So we need to come up with innovative solutions for growing food and for distributing food. So what are your solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Sebastian raised the issue of the Philippi horticultural area. What we think is that the focus on urban agriculture alone has allowed cities to abdicate their responsibility from thinking about wider food systems issues. And the loss of agricultural land to development, particularly to development for middle-income housing, is a great concern because it reduces resilience in the food system. We've got to think about how people do actually access food and enhance that ability. So we know that a lot of people are buying food at the end of the day near the taxi ranks because they don't have time to cook at home, they don't have the storage, they don't have the refrigeration. So thinking about things like, well, how do you incentivize the sale of healthier foods by those taxi ranks so that you're providing cheap, affordable, nutritious food to people where they are? So it's about thinking about what spatial and economic policies might be in place. How do you link food planning with transport planning? Now, what we're saying is we need to have a view of how the food system works and respond to that rather than just thinking at these kind of household scale interventions. And all of those things actually fall within municipal mandates.
All right. But to what extent has this concept caught on in South Africa? We speak of certain areas like Philippi and other areas as well where urban agriculture is happening. Has it caught on to a great degree?
Has urban agriculture?
Urban agriculture.
We've seen, you know, in some cities it's fairly high because there's good soil and there's plenty of land. In other cities, not so much because the soil is poor and there's not a lot of land. So we can't make a blanket statement around that. We also need to think about urban agriculture beyond simply the community gardens and thinking around small scale commercial agriculture, small holdings, which are often left out of the planning, which may again be alternative avenues to get food to the poor.
All right. We have to rethink how our food systems work, says Dr. Jane Battersby-Leonard, Senior Researcher in Urban Food Security and Food Systems at UCT. Thank you very much for chatting to us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Rowena.
And still to come in Morning Talk, we're going to talk about the legalities of false advertising. That's coming up after the news headlines at 9:30 with Kumbuzile Tabete.